From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jacob Resnick. Coming up, the EPA announces it will study the Bristol Bay watershed and look at potential impacts of development, including hard rock mining like the Pebble Mine. Lawsuits have been filed on both sides over the controversial closures to protect the endangered Stellar Sea Lion. There's federal loan money available for skippers and crew to get back into crabbing, and initiatives are in the works to address concern about halibut ending up as bycatch. But first, farmed salmon stocks from South America appear to be making a comeback after being devastated by disease. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
After being hit by a virus and financial trouble, the Chilean farmed salmon industry says it should be back to normal levels by 2013. Reuters reports that the trade group Salmon Chile says the worst of the crisis is over and predicted this year's gross output would be 300,000 tons, but that's still less than half of the volume seen during its production peak. The global supply of farmed salmon fell in 2009 for the first time since 1992 due to disease in Chile, according to the world's largest fish farmer, Marine Harvest. Estimated output in 2010 was the lowest in nearly a decade after a deadly virus more than halved Chilean salmon output from its peak of 650,000 tons in 2008. Meanwhile, a new study published this week shows a link between salmon farms in British Columbia and elevated levels of sea lice on wild sockeye in the Fraser River. The article genetically identified 30 distinct stocks of infected juvenile sockeye that passed by open net pen salmon farms in the Strait of Georgia. Not only did juvenile Fraser sockeye host higher lice levels after they passed salmon farms, these fish hosted more sea lice than neighboring rivers where there are no farms. The study was conducted by researchers working in a joint effort that includes the University of Victoria and the Watershed Watch Salmon Society, both in BC.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
While commercial quota cuts and sport charter restrictions gathered the most attention at the recent meeting of the International Pacific Halibut Commission in British Columbia, the International Fisheries Body also responded to industry concerns about bycatch of halibut in other fisheries. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Commercial halibut season runs from noon on March 12th to noon on November 18th. That's according to the unanimous vote of the six U.S. and Canadian commissioners. For the most part on this issue, the commissioners went with a recommendation from the Processors Advisory Group and Conference Board of fishermen and other stakeholders. Staff had recommended a slightly shorter season with a few days less on either end. The processors, the conference board, and several individuals in the audience last week all called for more to be done to monitor and reduce the bycatch of halibut and other fisheries in the Gulf of Alaska and Bering Sea. The commission didn't act on the specific bycatch proposals. However, it did establish a halibut bycatch project that will focus on addressing bycatch concerns. In the U.S., the National Marine Fisheries Service is working to restructure its Fishery Observer Program to better monitor bycatch. However, the new program is not expected to be in place until 2014. The Halibut Commission's bycatch project will be led by the commission chair and vice chair. They expect to have a report with recommendations in time for next year's annual meeting. Meanwhile, the commission also directed staff to study a couple of potential regulatory changes for next year. They'll take a look at the feasibility of a tagging system that could account for non-commercial halibut catches. Also, in response to concerns over the decline in the size of halibut at any given age, the commission will have staff take a look at the possibility of reducing the size limit for commercially caught fish. On a broader subject, the commissioners also agreed to conduct a performance review of the entire Pacific Halibut Commission process. Commissioner Jim Balsiger.
I think it's important to note that the Halibut Commission staff is completely supportive of this. There is no defensive feel any place, either in the commission side or the staff side. We're looking forward to an open review of our policies and procedures.
As quotas have declined sharply, some stakeholders, particularly in Southeast Alaska, have grown more critical of the Commission's public process and its methods for estimating the amount of halibut that's available for harvest. Balsiger said Canada and the U.S. would each have a commissioner watch over the review, but according to Balsiger, it will be conducted by outside experts who will attend this next year's cycle of meetings and workshops and hopefully have a report sometime after the 2012 annual meeting. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
The Environmental Protection Agency announced this week it will be conducting a scientific assessment of the Bristol Bay watershed. The far-reaching study will look at impacts of large-scale development, including hard rock mining like the proposed Pebble Mine, on the region's fisheries. KDLG's Mike Mason has details.
The EPA's scientific assessment of the Bristol Bay watershed is intended to allow the EPA to understand how future large development projects could affect the water quality of the region and Bristol Bay's world-famous salmon fishery. The announcement of the scientific assessment was made by Dennis McLaren, the EPA's regional administrator.
The assessment is, of course, in response to what we've heard from many, many Alaskans, that they're concerned about the health of Bristol Bay and the fishery going forward with development proposals that might come down in the future. So what we're doing is initiating a scientific assessment that will help us review existing science that's out there, look at any new information that may be available, and then also consult with all of the stakeholders, whether it be Alaska Natives or possible developers or federal agencies or state agencies, to determine what the best available science is out there, and look at that best available science in relation to risk to the fishery and risk to the watershed from development proposals.
McLaren anticipates that the scientific assessment will allow the EPA to identify the protective measures that could or should be put in place to protect the watershed from large-scale mineral development projects like the proposed Pebble Mine.
We know the importance of Bristol Bay to Alaskans and know the world-renowned nature of the fishery there. But we've been asked to use some of our regulatory authority, and we need to develop the science and the underpinnings for us to better understand how the fishery works up there, what the science is, and use that information and develop a public process as well, where we take input from all the stakeholders to decide what we need to do going forward to protect the fishery.
McLaren was quick to point out that the new scientific assessment is not the start of the official process that would allow the EPA to use its veto authority under the Clean Water Act related to the discharge of dredged or fill material into waterways or wetlands. One of the organizations supporting the EPA using its 404C authority is the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. Bob Waldrop is the group's executive director. He anticipates the scientific assessment shortening the public process that would be necessary for the EPA to use the 404C veto authority.
Because a very important part of the 404C process is gathering data. If it's pre-collected and EPA feels justified in doing so, and they could launch then a 404C process, that would be, I think, as a result, perhaps even shorter than it might normally have been. So that's encouraging in that regard. This is all speculation on my part.
It's believed that the scientific assessment will focus on the risks posed to the Bristol Bay region from hard rock mining projects, but the EPA stressed in their public statement that the assessment will consider the effects of large-scale development projects in general. EPA Regional Administrator McLaren confirms that as part of the scientific assessment, the EPA will accept input from the public. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski issued a statement commending the EPA for their decision to assess the potential impacts of mining and other development projects on the Bristol Bay watershed. However, further on in her statement, Senator Murkowski said that any attempt to prejudge a project before the environmental work is finished would be a troubling signal, as well as a clear violation of the environmental review process. The Pebble deposit, which is at the heart of the mining discussions in the Bristol Bay region, is located on state land and is thought to be one of the largest gold and copper deposits on Earth. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Meanwhile, the chief executive of the Pebble Partnership, John Shively, told the Associated Press that it's premature to study the issue as the company's permit applications are at least a year away. Shively had made a similar statement last week during a speech in front of the Sitka Chamber of Commerce. Shively conceded that its location makes the project complicated, but argued that the debate isn't a question of mining versus fish.
I've said many times, will continue to say, that if you have to make a choice between mining and fish, you choose fish every single time. There's no question about that. It's a renewable resource, and it's a renewable resource for commercial activity, for sport activity, and most importantly, for subsistence activity. So it can't be a choice.
The Pebble Partnership is a consortium between British mining giant Anglo American and Canadian firm Northern Dynasty. The gold and copper deposit is thought to be one of the largest ever discovered and sits on state land near Iliamna Lake. The states of Alaska and Washington announced this month they will conduct a review of a recent biological opinion by the National Marine Fisheries Service concerning the impact of groundfish fisheries on the endangered Steller sea lions. Fish and wildlife officials from both states said they will assemble a panel of scientists to determine whether federal regulators used all relevant scientific information and impartially considered those facts in its final biological opinion for Bering Sea and Aleutian Islands and Gulf of Alaska groundfish fisheries released last November. That biological opinion found the western population of the Steller sea lions are threatened and recommended fishery closures and other restrictions in the western Aleutians. Those restrictions went into effect this year. Both states have petitioned for the removal of the eastern sea lion populations from the endangered species list, arguing that there have been steady increases in population alongside active fisheries in southeast Alaska, as well as British Columbia and the states of Washington and Oregon. The panel's report will be released to the public and forwarded on to the North Pacific Fishery Management Council and the seafood industry. Meanwhile, two environmental groups are siding with the federal government over closures. Greenpeace and Oceana filed motions to join the suits that pits the National Marine Fisheries Service against the state of Alaska. Michael Levine, senior counsel for the environmental group Oceana, says that the federal scientists' findings are under fire from political and commercial interests.
The broad-based and ideological attacks on that rule and the science underlying it by the state of Alaska and the Seattle-based fishing industry bore a response, and we are involved to ensure that the best science is brought to the table in defense of those actions.
Oceana successfully sued the National Marine Fisheries Service in 1998, and a federal judge found the agency hadn't done enough to protect the species. Fishing interests, including the Freezer Longliner Coalition, also opposed the closure. The industry group has also filed legal challenges against the federal government. Last year, more than 400,000 pounds of marine debris were cleaned up from Alaska's beaches. Ocean currents bring debris from Asia to Alaska's shores. There also are domestic sources for marine debris, such as drift and trawl nets, floats, and plastics, including water bottles. One of the bigger projects last year was removing a derelict fishing vessel from the Northern Fur Seal Rookery on St. Paul Island. The Marine Conservation Alliance says that since 2003, more than 2 million pounds of marine debris has been removed from the state's coastlines.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families, on the web at amsea.org.
The National Marine Fisheries Service has $8 million available for a loan program designed to develop the crab fishery. The federal agency is now accepting applications from current and former crab fishermen to buy crab individual fishing quotas, known as IFQs. These loans allow crews on crab vessels to borrow up to 80% of the cost of a crab quota share, and they can also be used to refinance IFQ loans that had been made previously. Earl Bennett leads the program for the Fisheries Finance Program. He says the loan program should provide an immediate benefit.
The program will allow captains and crew members to become part of the ownership of the fisheries quota share system. It provides a source for them to finance the purchase of quota share. This becomes a benefit, I think, for them personally and for the communities.
It's been 6 years since the idea was proposed. Bennett says the delay stemmed from the program being bundled with other financial initiatives. And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, KDLG's Mike Mason in Dillingham, and KCAW's Robert Wolsey in Sitka. From KMXD in Kodiak, I'm Jacob Resnick.